It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Bill Carnes. You're tuned in to the Second Amendment Radio Show. We'd like to shorten that down and just call ourselves 2A Radio. If you ever want to check in, you can go to 2aradio.com. You can always email me, bill@2aradio.com. You can also check out anything related to me if you like. I got a little website called billcarnes.com. There's no E in my name at any point in time in any of my names. First, middle, or last, it's B-I-L-L-C-A-R-N-S. However, if you throw the E in there, C-A-R-N-E-S, and spell out billcarnes.com, that'll shoot you to the proper site as well. It's okay. There used to be an E in the last name, and then when the settlers moved west from my relatives down in Kentucky and Tennessee area, somewhere along the line, somebody dropped the E. So, anyhow, a little bit of genealogy for you on my part. I want to talk about laws when it comes to carrying guns. In Utah, it's one of the only states where they do not restrict your right to protect yourself if you happen to be on a college campus. Well, a couple of officers are on leave after leaking a gun policy. Let me read this to you. A pair of University of Utah public safety officers are on paid administrative leave after internal guidelines that would ban the open carrying of firearms were made public. Gun rights activists say such a policy violates state laws, and legislators are getting involved in the dispute. Zachary Wellman, a security guard at a university hospital, said he and another campus police officer would put on leave last week after Wellman shared the guidelines with a friend who took the university protocols to gun advocacy groups and state lawmakers. Wellman said he did it because he believed university lawyers were going around the legislature to rewrite the law. Quote, they're saying we don't want visible guns on campus, but state law is that they have to accept it because they're a state university. That's what Wellman told the Salt Lake Tribune. It's a huge issue because they're circumventing the Utah law, and the university president is now making the law, which they have no power to do. In a memo sent to University Police Chief Scott Folsom last April, President Michael Young wrote that, quote, having weapons in plain sight on this campus creates a fearful and intimidating campus environment, end quote. To who? Are you speaking on behalf of everyone there? Because if I were there, I would not feel the same. Therefore, your statement is incorrect. Now, Young said that the school shootings, including in 2007 at Virginia Tech, where 32 died, created safety concerns among students and faculty. Utah law doesn't allow anyone to carry a weapon openly on campus, he said, whether or not they have a concealed weapons permit, and the law allows a university to deal with issues that interfere with the school's educational mission. The guidelines sent to police officers directs them to arrest anyone openly carrying a firearm if they don't have a concealed weapons permit. If the individual has a permit, the officers are to instruct the gun owner to conceal the weapon or leave campus. Individuals who refuse could be cited, while repeat offenders can be arrested. Violation of state law. The guidelines, revised in September, were distributed to campus police officers who were told the document, quote, is not for public distribution. Now, Clark Asfoyan, chairman of the Utah Shooting Sports Council, a gun advocacy group, sees the issue differently than Young. He says the concealed weapons permit allows individuals to conceal their weapons, but does not require that they be hidden. It allows them to carry it concealed. Quote, it's not that we're out there advocating for people to openly carry their firearms, he says, but it's legal, and we don't want someone taking away a right that we have because of the University of Utah's skewed perception or pattern of being biased against guns and gun owners. Representative Kurt Oda out of Clearfield, Utah, who is a concealed weapons instructor, called the university's actions unconscionable and said the two officers deserve whistleblower protection. I completely concur. These officers have done nothing wrong. All they're doing is making public what the university is keeping secret from anybody who might have a weapon up there. And we need to know these policies, he said. That's completely ideological. We ought to be putting the university administrators on leave for doing the kind of crap they're pulling. Now, university spokesman Remy Barron said that the guidelines in question are protocols that officers use when responding to, quote, potentially dangerous situations, and therefore aren't intended for public consumption and aren't subject to state open records law. So they're playing hide the weenie. He said the protocols have been used successfully in instances on campus where someone felt threatened by an individual openly carrying a gun. Not threatened, scared. Oh my God, someone's got a gun. That's the good guy. Don't worry about it. Are you scared when you see a cop carrying a gun? No, you shouldn't be scared when you see a private citizen carrying a gun. He says the university believes that this protocol and its overall policy on guns on campus follow state law. Now, there's a long and contentious history involving guns on the university campus. For years, the university banned guns campus-wide, but Utah Attorney General Mike Scuttlefield issued an opinion in 2001 that the school had no authority to implement such a ban, and 3 years later, the legislature passed a law prohibiting schools from restricting the possession or use of firearms. In 2006, the Utah Supreme Court ruled that the university lacked the authority to ban guns. Since then, the university has allowed concealed weapons permit holders to carry guns on campus, but resisted efforts to allow guns to be openly carried, including opposing a 2008 bill that would have allowed firearms to be carried in public sight without having to have a CCW. Oda said that since the school lost the court fight, administrators have tried to find ways around the ruling and are overstepping their bounds. He says, I'm going to be watching them like a hawk, as he should be. Because here's the same thing you've got, like what you've got with Richard Daley in Chicago. He knows what the Supreme Court said about carrying guns, about the right of the people not being infringed when it comes to having their Second Amendment rights. But he's still trying to screw all of the people there. Same thing with the entire state legislature and many city councils throughout the state of California, throughout the state of New Jersey, in some cases throughout the state of Hawaii. And many, many others. These campus officials should be put on administrative leave, suspended without pay for violating state laws and the more egregious act of violating the rights and the liberties of those on the University of Utah campus. Whether your rights have been just trampled on by these jackasses, or they're going to if you want to exercise that right, it's all the same. I think they should be prosecuted, starting with the president of the University of Utah. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back from the break, everyone. So, it's time for a bad guy to launch his attack. Are you ready? Right now. Are you ready? What's going to happen? Will you be a victim? Will you be able to recover from the instant shock and react and do something about it? Well, if the politicians have their way, the answer to that's going to be no. They're going to say, we're going to create a safe society. And in that safe society, you don't need to worry about people doing this sort of thing because it's a safe society. Now that it's such a safe society, you can turn in your guns. As a matter of fact, we're going to require you to do that. Then we, the government, will be in charge of everyone's safety. Does this sound familiar? Anybody live in Germany around 1939 when this happened? Working up to the safe society, everything's great, turn in your guns. Now we're going to go on a rampage. Not just, we'll start here in this country, then we're going to move it across Europe. We're going to take over the world. We're going to kill millions upon millions of people in the process because we don't like what they do or say, such as those of you, you're not allowed to talk about politicians. You're not allowed to write about certain things about politicians. You have to offer an equal and opposing view, and if we don't want to offer one, then you just can't talk. These are the same jackwagons that want to restrict our rights to speak, our rights to carry a gun, our God-given earthly rights to protect ourselves and our families. These are the same people. In Florida, a jogger who jogs with a pistol because he takes his safety seriously, he's not going to be charged for shooting and killing a teenager who attacked him during a midnight run. Prosecutors just recently said that they're convinced that Thomas Baker acted in self-defense when he fired 8 shots at 18-year-old Carlos Mustelere near Tampa, Florida in November. Prosecutors said that Florida's Stand Your Ground law was a factor in their decision. The law, passed in 2005, provides that people, it says that it gives them the right. People aren't given rights. If they're given to somebody, it's a privilege. I hate the way that these people who write stories, or, and oftentimes it's politics, well, we're going to give you the right. If you're giving it to me, it's a privilege. Where they recognize the people's right to use deadly force as long as they reasonably believe it's necessary to stop another person from hurting them. And it's not just hurting them. It's to stop another person from causing death or serious bodily injury. That's the way it is all over the country. To prevent someone from causing, they have to be under the imminent threat of death or serious bodily injury to themselves or someone else right there. Then you can respond with deadly force. Baker told police he reached for his gun when the teen punched him in the face. Baker had a concealed weapons permit. The teen hit him. The teen was hit 4 or 5 times in the chest, back, and buttocks. He died at the scene. Of course, they keep calling him the teen. He was 18, so technically he's a teenager. However, legally speaking, he was a minor, but no longer juvenile. He's an adult. So this adult scumbag ran up to punch this guy and rob him. He was beating him up. So this guy pulled out his gun and shot him. Curiously, we've been speaking obviously a lot about the shooting that happened in Tucson last Saturday, over this week. And the very first case of a concealed weapons holder in the state of Arizona, when they went to a shall issue system back in the 1990s, I think it was 1997, they went back to shall issue. Now they have no issue. It's just constitutional carry. If you can legally own and possess a gun, carry it open, carry it concealed, just carry it. It's cool. So, the very first case that went to court in Arizona back in, I think it was 97 when they switched over to shall issue from a may issue state, there was a smaller statured guy that was an outdoor venue. If I remember right, it was like an all-day concert and picnic sort of thing. Hanging out with some friends. Somebody there had a mutual friend, some other big, tough, now drunk guy. And someone brought up to the smaller guy who was actually packing, hey, did you get one of those new cool concealed carry permits and are you packing? So he started talking about it. The big drunk guy, after a while, didn't like it and started picking on this guy, the smaller guy. Ended up beating his ass. So the small guy pulled out his gun and shot this dude while he was getting his ass beat. And the big guy died. He was arrested. He was prosecuted. In court, they laid out what happened. The county coroner came in as an expert witness, and he was asked by the defense attorney, the attorney for the guy who did the shooting. And he asked the county coroner, he said, could the victim, the dead guy, considering his size and weight, have you ever had a case where somebody roughly that size and weight ever caused death to someone with their bare hands of someone roughly the size and weight of the defendant? And the coroner said, well, absolutely. And here are dozens and dozens of files of those cases. At that point in time, the judge realized that the prosecution had no case. The prosecution said that the defendant in this case, the smaller guy, couldn't articulate they had a reasonable fear of death or serious bodily injury because the big guy that he shot didn't have a gun. God created man. Sam Colt made them equal. Size and age and fitness disparities, no longer. When you can arm someone with a gun, it is the great equalizer. In the hands of someone who is working under the idea of being the offensive person with a gun, it is everyone else who is obeying the law and has their gun for defensive purposes that levels the playing field. Do you understand? You cannot legislate morality. You cannot pass laws to prevent psychotic people from doing things. You can't do it. You know, they were talking about this Jason Loeffler, the suspect in the mass shooting in Tucson last Saturday, saying that it's all right-wing political TV and radio and sort of rhetoric that caused him to go in there and shoot this woman who's a Democrat. Not so. Because they had one of his friends from high school, the high school days, and then on into current time, said, yeah, he didn't watch TV and he didn't listen to talk radio. All of that is an empty bunch of lies. Attacking the right, attacking the right people on the right who are actually for people being able to defend themselves. All it is an attack towards liberty. It's an attack towards freedom. It is an attack on your rights and mine. Claiming, oh yeah, it's all the right-wing political rhetoric. No, because we heard it from his buddy and hung out with him. No, he didn't watch TV or listen to right-wing, to talk radio or right-wing blogs or anything such as that. All of this information will come out. This kid will probably eventually talk. As a matter of fact, he'll probably write a book. Right? That's probably what's going to happen. He's probably going to write a book, and all the proceeds are going to go towards the families of his innocent victims. Probably what's going to happen if history repeats itself at all. There's going to be eventual interviews with family members, friends, relatives, things such as that, where we're going to find all of this out for sure. Right now, that's the way it looks, is all the rhetoric from the left, that all of the speech from the right was what caused all this. That's not it at all. And then you want to also, we're going to go into break in just a second here. When we do this, we're going to come back and we're going to talk a bit about single issue voters and the sorts of responses that we get when someone is a single issue voter. Namely, all they vote on is someone's stance on guns and gun rights. And we're going to make some comparisons to some other popular single issue voting items and try to compare this to really true patriotism, freedoms, and liberties here in America. So stay tuned. We're going to get to that after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
Welcome back from the break. So the dangers of single-issue voters, we're going to talk about that because oftentimes people are single-issue voters, in this case, say on the Second Amendment, on your gun rights. It's very dangerous. Let me describe to this in very real terms here. Gabby Gifford, the representative in Congress, who was shot in the head last Saturday, she was a Democrat who was pro-gun. One of these people who claims to be fiscally conservative, yet socially responsible, as they like to say. That's someone who they say they want to have all these social benefits for everybody in the world. And the government should be the ones to handle all of that. But yet, fiscally conservative, you can't do that. You can't be conservative with money and then want to take more and more and more to pay for all these social programs that the government cannot do responsibly. I think the most recent study came out that 3 cents of every dollar that is collected and under the guise of social programs actually gets put into the hands of the social programs. 3% actually goes to the end user, be it for food or clothing or monetary value, whatever. 97% is eaten up by the government through their administrative process. You can't get more inefficient than that. You really can't. 97% inefficiency? Seriously? You're all fired. You're all fired. And the programs are getting shut down. Here's the idea. You've got to look at a wide swath of things. Now, Gabby Gifford voted for Obamacare, the most sweeping, widespread, huge money spending, anti-liberty, anti-freedom, constitutional violating piece of legislation ever to go through Capitol Hill in history. She voted for that, but she's pro-gun. So on top of other really lousy left-wing sort of pieces of legislation, I'm just making it a point. There's a lot of Democrats that claim to be pro-gun that voted for Obamacare. Okay? So if you're pro-gun and that person is running for office and you vote for them, say a lot of pro-gun people voted for Gabby Gifford. Say a lot of people voted for Gabby Gifford down in her district down in South Arizona, District 8. Because she was pro-gun and they like guns. Great. Well, you elected somebody who then voted for Obamacare, which is, the federal judge just agreed, 3 weeks ago or something, that was unconstitutional? You see the problem with single-issue voters? This is the single-issue vote that baffles me the most. And this is going to pull on a lot of emotional strings for those of you who are out there. So get ready for this. Some of you are not going to like just the subject matter. It's going to be so sensitive, you're going to close off your minds. That's not what it's intended to do. It's intended to wake your mind up. The topic is your stance on abortion. About half the country is pro-life, meaning no abortion. The other half is what they refer to as pro-choice, being it's okay for abortion. Here's the issue. The issue is this. The Supreme Court ruled in the 70s in Roe v. Wade that abortion is legal. Okay? That's what they ruled. So for people to vote for politicians based on that politician's stance on abortion is completely unfounded. Because the politicians can't do anything about it. They are constrained by the decision of the court. They can't do anything about it. If you want to have your views heard on your stance on abortion, they need to go to the senators who are about to approve the only people that can do anything about it, and that is someone who's nominated to the Supreme Court. A Supreme Court justice nominee is the only person that you should care what their stance on abortion is, more so how they would rule. And if we look at it the way that the Constitution was actually written, it shouldn't matter what a politician or Supreme Court justice feels or thinks personally. It should have to do with the constituency of the people that politician represents, or, when it comes to that of the justices, their interpretation of the Constitution in its strictest form is what it should be. What the founders meant when they wrote it. So we're not going to get into the debate of pro-choice, pro-life. What we're getting into is the dangers of being a single-issue voter. If you vote for someone because they share the same stance on abortion, pro-life or pro-choice that you do, you have wasted your vote having not looked at anything else. If you're so staunchly set on your opinion on when it comes to abortion, that is what you vote for. That's it. How this politician stands on abortion. That politician will never see a piece of legislation dealing with abortion. Chances are, in their entire political career. Look at everything else. you could vote for somebody who might not have the higher grade when it comes from the NRA or Gun Owners of America. You might vote for somebody that has a B or even a C rating as opposed to a B plus or an A rating. Because everything else that they vote for, say if somebody's got an A rating, everything else they vote for might suck. Harry Reid got a B, if I remember correct. B is an above average from the NRA. Got an F from Gun Owners of America, but a B from the NRA. Okay, was that properly looked at? No, it wasn't properly looked at. The NRA had the speaker, I'm sorry, not speaker, that's, they had the Senate Majority Leader as an ally of sorts. They didn't want to lose that if he lost the if he won the election. If he lost the election, they knew they were going to have Sherrod Engel and A in there. That was a given. Burning a little bit of bridge with her, maybe throwing some hot tinder on her bridge, but not wanting to burn the Harry Reid bridge. Okay, that's the NRA. They didn't do it straight up. They didn't do it straight up. Again, the NRA is an organization of compromise when it comes to politics. Politically speaking, the NRA is an organization of compromise. So, if you are a single-issue voter, either all about guns, which listening to 2A radio, there might be some single-issue gun voters out there, or you're single-issue voter based on, you know, you hate daylight savings time and you want to vote for somebody that's going to try to repeal daylight savings time and everybody stays on standard time. Okay. What about campaign finance reform? That's the only thing you're worried about. You have to look at the whole package. You might vote for somebody who's got a slightly lower grade in your passionate area because everything else they believe in is important. The stuff that will probably more likely come up in front of them, they will deal with properly. If you have one of these representatives or senators that represents you in your area, and they are one of these scumbags that is either introducing anti-speech or anti-gun laws in the wake of the shooting in Tucson, or are signing on as a co-sponsor to that sort of legislation, let them know that you cannot pick and choose the freedoms, rights, and liberties that they support and then trash all the rest. That's the problem with the left. They really think that they can pick and choose what is good for us to have and what is old school. We don't need to worry about that from the Constitution. You use the modern interpretation. It's a living, breathing document. It's not, and there's only one interpretation. The strict interpretation by the men who wrote it at the time they wrote it for the reasons they did. Stay tuned. More to come. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on! I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
Now, the mass shooting in Tucson that happened last weekend overshadowed another fairly substantial shooting that otherwise would probably be the headlines this week when it comes to gun-related things, and that is 2 dead and 4 hurt in a Baltimore club shooting. Now, listen to this. There's cops involved in this. A fight at a Baltimore nightclub spilled into the streets early Sunday and led to an eruption of gunfire that killed a police officer and another man and left 4 people hurt, according to police. One of those wounded was also a police officer who was shot in the leg, according to a police spokesman. Investigators were trying to determine if officers may have fired on a fellow officer whose badge and other identifying marks came off his uniform during the scuffle. No arrests have been made, but dozens of people were being questioned. This is an absolutely horrible incident. I prayed we would never lose another officer, but here we are again, says Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, Rawlings-Blake. I love the hyphens. An off-duty Baltimore detective was killed in October when he was hit in the head during an argument over a parking space. Guys, why are you arguing over a freaking parking space? What does your epitaph say? Look at somebody's tombstone. Here's the epitaph. It says, you know, John Doe Jr., whatever his name is, 16-year officer, dedicated his life to his family and his community, died while arguing over a parking space. Seriously? Not that you need to be a wimp and walk away. I mean, consider your fight. You got to choose your battles. Parking space? Come on. Now, authorities said officers arrived at the Select Lounge to find a large fight and called for backup. Investigators still weren't sure if anyone besides officers had fired their weapons. Really? This is such a melee that they don't know? Quote, it was a pretty significant fight from what we understand. A large fight and a number of officers responded. It ultimately spilled out into the parking lot, according to a police spokesman. The police spokesman said that the dead officer was 33 and an 8-year veteran of the department, but said he likely wouldn't be identified for another couple of days. He also said he did not give the name of the other male victim. The spokesman said the second officer was shot in a leg and was expected to recover. The others wounded also were not identified, but the spokesman said they were in their 20s. Meanwhile, investigators were at the nightclub trying to piece together events. Here's a quote. It says, we have a lot of ground to cover and a lot of people to talk to. Well, duh. Spokesman also said that no off-duty Baltimore officers were working security at the club, nor were any at the club. He said he did not know if the club had its own security staff. At dawn on Sunday, police tape surrounded the block of the Select Lounge. No one answered when a reporter knocked on the door, and police asked a reporter and a photographer to leave. So much for freedom of the press. Police tape also surrounded a parking lot containing about 25 cars and lay in the foyer of the club. The club is a mixed industrial and residential area, not far from the hospital where victims had been taken. It's next to a car wash. The valet's blah, da, 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 da. The rest of this is unimportant. Let's see. Sunday wasn't the first time the city's nightlife has been rocked by shootings. In March, 2 people were shot outside the Velvet Rope nightclub when a fight inside the club spilled onto the street. And on July 5th, off-duty police officer Ganji A. Tashamba was out in a neighborhood known for its nightlife when authorities say he shot and killed an unarmed Iraq war veteran. Good job, Ganji. Police say Tashamba and Tyrone Brown had gotten into a heated argument when Tashamba shot Brown 12 times with his department-issued Glock handgun. And, of course, Tashamba has been charged with that man's murder. So, interesting what's happening with the police of Baltimore. Baltimore's a complete mess. It always has been a complete mess. When it comes to all the political corruption that goes on there, and let's not worry about the people, let's worry about ourselves. It is the cross section there when it comes to race is it's a majority black, and the black part of town and the white part of town there's a definite separation there. It's almost like conscious segregation. And it's always been a mess. They've always tried to come up with some political balance to this rather than addressing any real issues. The police department's always been all over the map. And I'm not afraid to say it. It's just the way it is. It's just the way it is there. It's a complete mess. Absence of any true leadership for decades. And this is a major city right next to our nation's capital, which is another huge complete mess. Take all of the politicians out of D.C. and you just talk about the mayor, the city council, the way that they run things, a lot of the violence involved in Washington, D.C. It's not a very big city. It used to be 10 square miles, and then across the Potomac, they gave back that back to Virginia. Now you just have everything right there, a quarter right there where Maryland is, on the east side of the Potomac. It's now about 7 square miles or so. And just what a mess. What an absolute mess. That whole area, what a mess. Now, Virginia doesn't have too many problems because they have some good laws and some decent leadership. You get too many lefties in there trying to make everyone happy, and everyone's miserable. Speaking about that area of D.C., now that the Republicans are in charge of the House, what the Republicans are going to try to do is to shut down all of the White House czars, as it were. Now, I believe Reagan was the first president to have any sort of a czar. He introduced it with the war on drugs. He was going to, he appointed a drug czar. Now, every president since then has gone out of line when it comes to these czars. Okay, to appoint a drug czar, which is essentially just under a cabinet-level position, anybody who's a czar, they're in charge of a department. But the Senate doesn't have to confirm them. As it stands now, the only person who's part of the president's cabinet that is exempt from Senate approval is his chief of staff. Other than that, everybody else is Secretary of Defense, Secretary of Homeland Security, Secretary of State, Secretary of the Treasury, Secretary of Education, Secretary of Transportation, blah, da, 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 da. They all have to be approved by the Senate, except for the President's Chief of Staff, who now is actually just got appointed, is the brother of Richard Daley, the scumbag mayor of Chicago. His brother's now the new Chief of Staff. Well, the House Republicans are introducing a bill that will effectively shut down the czar's offices. The bill is being authored by Representative Steve Scalise, a Republican out of Louisiana, and it's a revamped version of a proposal that went pretty well nowhere in the last Congress. It got stalled in the committee. But now with Republicans in charge of the House, and this year a particularly combative Republican is in charge of the committee that's going to consider this new bill, the proposal might actually have a fighting chance this time around. Scalise says, his spokesman Steve Bell says, we're hopeful for this one. Okay, well, I'm sure you are. Though the definition of a czar is muddy at best, it generally refers to a top-level administration official who doesn't have to go through the Senate confirmation process we just spoke about. And this bill introduced by Scalise aims to be a little bit more specific than that, defining of a czar as, quote, the head of any task force, council, policy office, etc., within the executive office of the president, or similar office, appointed, quote, without the advice and consent of the Senate. Okay. And this has been introduced in the House, not in the Senate. So hopefully we'll get somewhere with this. These czars have gotten out of control. They believe there might be as many as like 38, I think, was the last count that I read. 38 czars that have some sort of official capacity but are unofficial. How do you do that? How do you give somebody, you appoint somebody. Okay, well, I'm going to appoint you. You're going to get, you know, $280,000 a year. You're going to be over this area, but I'm going to create the position and everybody has to answer to you and they have to do what you say. And you report back to me. But this is unofficial and it's Senate doesn't approve it, but people need to listen to you. Otherwise we'll fire them. Right? How do we do this in this country? How do we get away with this? How do the presidents do this? I'm not a fan of this. Not a huge fan of the executive decision, except for in times of some sort of duress, maybe. There's got to be some sort of limitation on this. But hopefully, the House will be able to get this done. They'll be able to word it properly. And the thing is, again, we have the House controlled by the Republicans, the Senate controlled by the Democrats. So when it comes to everybody getting screwed with lousy legislation, we're pretty safe. But to unring these unconstitutional bells that the Obama regime has been putting in is going to be difficult, guys. It's going to be real difficult.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you, Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com.